Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Appreciate each and every one of you who are here. Good to see you. Let me give a brief summary of yesterday for those who were not able to be with us, and then I'll give you a little bit of an overview of tomorrow. We do want to ask everybody if you could kind of move up to the front section here. It helps create a more warm environment, and then we also plan this morning, as you'll see, to break out for some discussions so that you can talk about how to apply what we're talking about in your own life. A couple of things. One is, yesterday when we started, Jim Putman started us off, and Jim talked about how discipleship in the family is super important. It's God's plan, but that families typically don't know how to do discipleship. And so the Bible presumes that the church is actually the environment for disciple-making, and the disciple-making in the church then equips and empowers and models for parents how to disciple in the home. That was followed up by Sherry Surratt, talked to us about spiritual parenting, and she did a great job of laying a foundation that it begins with grace. Begins with God's grace to us, and then it reflects itself in, what's the expression that you use? God's grace for me would become God's grace from me, which is a great line. To become the foundation happens in the family. And then lastly, Brandon Cox talked to us about how we teach the word and how much the world is changing, and as families and as parents, we want to create an environment where it's okay to question, where it's okay to doubt. In fact, if we don't help them to do that in the home, they're going to do that. What better place than to do that in the home, and how the church really needs to rethink how we equip parents to help kids with those questions in the home. A couple of things that also happened yesterday is toward the end, we had some questions that were written down. Some of you had questions, and I want to circle back to those questions. When I remember what I did with them, I will... here they are. So I'm going to make sure that these questions come out in our discussion. For example, how do you deal with conflicts in discipleship was one question. And anytime you're dealing with people, you're going to have conflicts because you get my sinful nature and your sinful nature, and sparks are going to fly before long. And so conflicts will be a part of that. I have several other questions here. Let me tell you something we want to add this morning. We're going to give you a number. And as we are having a discussion, if you have a question that you would like our forum to deal with, you can text this number. It won't go directly to me. Instead, I have a secret plant, and it will go to my secret plant, and he will then filter all the comments and send questions to me, and we'll try to include these in it. So if you're ready, I'd like to give you that number. In fact, I think we're going to try to put it on the screen. That number is 909-718-2028. That's 909-718-2028. And we have a man named Damien who's going to get those and have them come to us. So we have the privilege this morning of having Jason Hauser start us off. And Jason lives every day with a ministry focused and with him personally focused on discipleship in the home. We have a one-minute video clip of his ministry, Seeds, and we could all watch that together. And then, Jason, take it away.
All right.
All right. So how's everybody doing this morning? Good. Well, happy to give you just a little picture of the Seeds Family Worship Ministry. It's 11 years old. It actually came out of Pastor Bobby's church in Franklin, Tennessee. I live in Idaho now. I migrated back to my homeland. Our ministry is about getting God's word to as many homes as possible around the world. And it's just on the video myself, and there's another couple, Philip and Jessica Morin, that are missionaries. And we go to churches just in America, and we help churches do the things we're talking about. I've actually been to real life church quite a few times. We've done some big events there that have really helped shape our ministry. But just really helping families do the things we're talking about today. How do you lead family worship in the home? How do we do discipleship at home? And so that's what we're going to be talking about. And I'm just thankful. I just want to say, you know, I'm a worship leader, and so the fact that we get to, I'm part of it this morning, because the fact we start with worship, we take the time to just worship God, to get our eyes on Him. And it wasn't our worship. It was short, but it was sweet this morning. Right? Can everybody agree with that?
Yeah.
So it's just good. I'm thankful. Obviously, it's not because of me. It's because God made us to worship Him. And so that's what we want to do, is take that and, like, how do we take this and then we put it into our homes? So the key passage, we talked about it yesterday, but I actually want us to look it up. If you have your Bible, your phone, your iPad, I want us to go ahead and look this passage up, because we're going to talk about it. Sherry talked about grace and being connected out with Deuteronomy 6. But we're going to kind of unpack it and kind of like, okay, let's try to really have a conversation here about what does that look like. And there's different ideas. There's not one right way. That's why this is a good place where we need to kind of wrestle through and go, okay, what does this really look like? But let's read the passage, Deuteronomy 6. We're going to read verses 4 to 7. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. And these words I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. So this is, Bobby said yesterday, this is the commission before the Great Commission, you know, for parents. And I include grandparents, because I believe multi-generational faithfulness is important. Grandparents have such a huge role in the lives of their grandchildren. And sometimes it can be spoiling ice cream and having fun, which is all a good thing. But the spiritual role that grandparents have, I just encourage grandparents not to forsake that, because it's a huge part of this plan, I believe. But as we talked about, we touched on yesterday, but I want to just, here's what I share with parents is, say the Lord our God, the Lord is one, that we say there is only one God. There's so much humanism in our American culture, and we talked to the group yesterday about many things going on in America that we're all aware of. But we need to say that Jesus Christ is Lord. Can everybody say amen to that?
Amen.
And say, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That we need to say there's only one God. There's not a lot of ways. There's not a mountain, and God's at the top. There's many ways to the top of that mountain. Jesus Christ came down for us. Oh, I'm fired up this morning, people. You know what I'm saying? This is the good news for families. This is what families need. We're talking about hope for families. Families need hope.
That's right.
And this is the hope. We have the hope. And so that's what we want to say. The Lord God, the Lord is one. And then it comes to the parents we talked about yesterday. You, okay, let's start right here. That are you loving God? Is God your Lord? Are you under the authority of, when in the Great Commission, Jesus said, all authority on heaven and earth has been given to me, right? And so we take our lives and we put our lives under the authority of Christ, and He becomes the Lord of our lives. So we have to decide for ourselves as parents and grandparents that we're going to love God and put Him first, that He's going to be the foundation. And then these words I command you today shall be on your hearts. And so as parents and grandparents, we need to be in the Word. We talked about that. Brandon talked about that yesterday. But that this is the foundation. It's like, well, we can't teach what we don't know, right? And so we have to be in the Word ourselves. And so once we've done those things, we've encouraged our parents to do that in our churches. And Jim touched on this yesterday when we started, and I thought about this last night, Jim, is really the church that has this role, because parents don't know how to do this. So really to do this discipleship in the home, most parents didn't see it in the home, most parents aren't doing it. So the church is the place where we're going to teach this And we are where we are, right? This is God's design. We stray from God's design, so we have to come back. How are we going to come back? I do believe that the church is the place where we're going to teach families this is God's design, and we're going to try our best not to do it for them, because they were like, here's my kid, we want to outsource things. But we're not going to do it for them. We're going to do it with them. We talked yesterday about a partnership, and that's, I think, where the big win is the church and families are partnering together, but the church is helping families learn how to do this. I think that's part of the plan to get to the next place, is just for the church to take that role. So one of the things that we see all around us is the current of our modern culture is so strong that we see families get swept away. We see marriages get swept away in it, and families just living like the world, and they're coming to church, but they're not engaged. And I mentioned I live in Idaho, and I love rivers. The town I live in, Twin Falls, Idaho, is on the Snake River. And I've gone on river rafting trips in Idaho and in Alaska. And if you spend much time in the river, if any rafting, you appreciate and respect the power of the current. Like, everything can be going great. You're cruising along the river, you're having a good time, and all of a sudden, your raft comes up against a rock, and that power of that water starts to come against you, and things can change from a party on the river to a life and death situation. You know what I'm saying? But that's what our culture is like for these young people. I think this generation of culture is so strong. And for families, I think families are so focused on giving their kids the best opportunities, which is a good thing, but they're not focused on the most important opportunities. And so it's their sports, which are great. Our kids play sports. I'm not dissing sports. I'm always very careful about this because I get parents upset with me.
It's because you're so passionate.
It is. I guess it is. But it's like sports, music, all these other things. But we have to help families know these things are the secondary things, that the greater things that we need to be dedicated to is discipleship. And sometimes you have to make decisions as parents that we're not going to play this sport. We're not going to do travel soccer. We're not going to do this because it's going to take away from our family time. We're not going to let the current of the culture take away. Because what happens is all these good things, they take away all of our time. And all of our time is gone. And we're like, the first thing to go is Deuteronomy 6. This doing this lifestyle, it's a different lifestyle that we choose for our family. And if we just are trying to be like everybody else in the culture, we're just doing all this stuff. And you got homework and sports and music and all these things. And we're going to go to college and we're doing this. And we miss it. And then before you know it, we're going to watch a video in just a minute. The whole season of their lives at home is gone. And you look back, and at that point, you can't go back and redo. And so we just want to encourage parents that you want to give your kids the best opportunities. Well, according to this passage, the best opportunity for your children to become followers of Jesus is through you. That's the best opportunity you can give your kids. And what Deuteronomy 6 says is, have a plan. Be intentional. It says, you shall teach them diligently. And so the diligence just means have a plan. You know, the plan can look different, and then it unpacks it. One of the things we talk about as Cease Family Worship Ministry, and we take families through, is the first thing, once you decide, okay, this is God's plan, is for us to be the primary disciples of our kids, and our church is a partner. Once you decide that's the plan, then you got to look at your family situation. And we call it the family worship fingerprint. And we talk about this in our book, Dedicated. You know, it's amazing how we are all unique. We all have a fingerprint. We all have this thumbprint of this is who we are. And we're all individuals that God made each of us unique. Well, every family is unique. And every family has blessings. Every family has challenges. And sometimes the blessings that you have as a family you take for granted. My wife's a nurse practitioner, and we talk about health struggles that families have all the time, individuals. And, you know, when your family's healthy, you just kind of take it for granted. Or maybe, you know, you have a good job, you're provided for financially. Maybe you have a church community that's strong where you're connected, or a life group where you're connected. These things that you have, they're just blessings and gifts from the Lord that you can take for granted. But you have to look at those things and appreciate them and who you are as a family. Then you also have to look at the challenges that you have. I always tell families, we're all dysfunctional, right? I got in front of our church and lead worship, and our lead pastor looked at me when I said this, but I said, you know, we're all just one big, happy, dysfunctional family, right? But we all do with the flesh, like we're talking about. We all have that. But we all have these challenges in our family, and sometimes it's the health of one of the parents or one of the children. Like one of our sons has to take shots every day of his life. That's just part of our story. So we look at those things and go, these are the challenges we have to deal with, or you have a special needs child, or maybe you're a single parent, right? So your life, your time is so precious. So you have to look at that and factor that into, okay, how are we going to live this out? I love how Deuteronomy 6 just breaks down. I'm going to go through these four sections just very quickly, and then we'll even watch this video. It says, it begins with, talk at them when you sit at your house. You know, one of the things that most families don't do like they've done in the past is sharing meals together. And it's not a requirement. It's like, don't feel bad if you don't eat meals together as a family. But I want to encourage you, if that's something that you can do. Even like for us, we've tried a couple nights a week, we actually have it scheduled that Monday and Tuesday nights we have dinner as a family. And we don't do it. It's not a religious thing like, oh, we're all freaky because we didn't have dinner together this week. But we're intentional. We have a plan. We do our dinner devotions. And there was a picture I took. I didn't get to put it up. But we have a little fire table in our backyard that we just got that we're excited about. And so we crank on the propane. We light a little fire. And we sit around. And we did this last week. Our devotion time was we sat around our fire table and said, let's go around the circle. Let's thank God for one thing. Let's pray for one person. And it wasn't rocket science to do that. And the kids said, we had fun. And we said, how was your day? We'll talk about the high and the low of your day. And then we'll just do a prayer time. But that's family. That's a family worship time. That's a powerful family worship time that you can do as a part of your day. So when you sit at your house, you know, many times families sit. What do families do when they sit at their house? Anybody? Just when you're sitting in the living room, what do? On the phone, right? Or what else? That's good.
Watch TV.
Watch TV, right? We don't count that, right? It's not a bad thing to do, but that's not engaging with each other, right? So we're talking about how does your family, so you're putting together an intentional plan, how does your family engage? How do you sit at the house? That can be a meal. That can be talking about the high low of your day. Just how are you going to communicate as a family, right? So you can define that. And again, it doesn't have to be overly structured. You can be like our family and sit around the fire if that's how families wire. When you walk, by the way, and we don't do a lot of walking nowadays, but what do we do all the time? Anybody? Drive. We spend a lot of time in the vehicle, especially if you live in this area right here. I've spent a lot of time in the vehicle. I live in a small town. So, but even in our town, right, as we're going to school, one of the things that we'll do is we listen to a proverb of the day, right? So there's 31 proverbs and as you go through the month, and we don't do it every day. Again, it's not like, oh, kids, we're going to listen to the book of Proverbs 50 times while you're growing up, because we're going to go to school. But we'll do it once or twice, because we just, every once in a while, we'll just, that'll be the thing of the day. I'll say, hey, we're going to listen to the proverb. But again, you start these habits. At first, your kids press against them, but they kind of become a thing. And then it's like, hey, we're going to have our family time. Everybody comes and sits in the living room. Hey, we're going to have, we're going to listen to the proverb on the way to school. Okay. Because I kind of know
that's right.
As we say, that's how we roll. You know what I mean? You kind of set the culture of your home, right? And so you do that. So you kind of, and again, especially if you haven't done these things, or if people that you're pastoring, if they haven't done these things, there's going to be some resistance. And it talks about that with their teenagers. Or even if you have been doing it, there's some pushback, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But you just got to press through. When you lie down, I think, Brandon, you mentioned yesterday that, like the 30 minutes before bed, is that you talked about that as some of the most important time, that can change the world,
that's
right? And one thing that I tell young parents, if you can start that when your kids are young, just to start praying for them as they're going to sleep, sweet, short, literally seconds of prayer for your children, and then just expand that. Hey, how can I pray for you? What's going on? Even as our kids are in their teens, and a lot of times I just pray for them, and I just say, hey, is there something I can pray for you about? Not every night. Just sometimes, I just drop it on them. They kind of go, hey, sometimes they share, most of the times they don't, right? But as you start that, having that time, and then you can read Bible stories, and then you can, like, there's a great Bible called the Jesus Storybook Bible. We talk about connecting things to Jesus. You know, that's a great, I just think every family, every Christian family should take their kids through that Bible paraphrase. But it's having that time. And then when you rise, am I going over time here? I'm just excited this morning.
It's all right. You get
okay, good. I'm having a good time, you can tell. Okay, this is awesome. Is he passionate about family ministry? We don't know. We couldn't tell. Okay, so when you rise, so this is the thing, you know, for bigger families, there's a family I mentioned earlier, Philip and Jessica Moore, and they have five children. They did a thing when they got convicted several years ago about really doing family worship and what that was going to look like for them. They decided for their family, for their family worship fingerprint, that they were going to have, they're like, you know what, we have breakfast every morning. We all like to eat food in the morning. They figured that out. Yeah, and so they go, you know, we can have breakfast together, just set a time, and then we can eat it, and we'll do a short devotion. We'll do it every school day in the morning. So they, again, they just, that was their decision, different than how we do our families. We do ours at night, but they, for them in the morning, for bigger families to have more structure often works well. And so they started doing that. And I actually, when I go to Nashville, sometimes I stay in their home, and I've done these devotions, and I thought, you know, isn't it distracting? Because they've got cereal bowls, and they're clanking, and people pass the bell, and they're talking, and I thought, is that going to work, right? I was a little skeptical, to be honest. But I got to experience it, and you know, eating and having these other activities going on actually helped the kids to be focused. I mean, they're engaging, and the dad would ask questions, and they would just pray for their food, they pray for the day, they do a short devotion from this book they were using at the time. And it was a great time. And for their family, that's been a win, and that's been their decision. So when you rise, they make that time. Bobby, you talk about with Chad and Ashley in the morning as they got older, many times with teenagers, you know, they've got different activities in, after school. And so you guys would do things in the morning, right? Now, I'm not a morning person by nature, so I prefer the nighttime. But that works really well for families. So, and just we always tell families, you know, it's parents aren't required to preach a sermon. It's not about that, you know. But I want to just end with this video, if I may, because I think we talk about these concepts, you know, and really what we talked about yesterday and then what I've touched on this morning. This video called Follow shows a dad who really is having this impression on his son. And he's being intentional. It doesn't really do have a family devotion for him, but you can see he is seeking God. He's praying to God. His son is watching him in fellowship, in relationship, in prayer, seeking God. And even through, you'll see as it goes through the seasons of life, even through the struggles, how they come back to that relationship and they come back to how the dad has modeled and how the son grasped that from seeing his dad's example. So let's watch this together. This is called Follow. So that's just a great picture of just how fast our lives are going by, and just a picture of the discipleship. Yeah, it's every time I watch this, you know. And you see, you know, for those of you that are parents, you see the season of life that you're in, and knowing it's not gonna last long. So just
and it shows just, the only thing that really matters in the end.
Yeah, yeah. And when you see,
so many,
you know,
so many people do so many things for their kids. And they're the wrong things. I mean, in and of themselves, they're fine. But as substitutes for what really matters, it just, you know, that describes, that shows what life's really, what you really want as parents.
So. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I love your crying.
Yes.
You can't tell.
So let's all just talk for a minute. Let's make
okay.
God.
How
the person
is. Let's just try to talk about how we apply lives. By the way, thank you for we have one question that's been texted in. On the board there's the number if you want to text them in. This is interesting. Yesterday we had this question that says, do you have specific methods of discipleship that have worked with you in your lives? And Jason, I think just right now just described for us, what that looks like. It's finding a way in the regular rhythms of life. And that's really the heart of Deuteronomy chapter 6. Finding a way in the regular rhythms of life to put the Lord at the center. Anybody having heard what Jason has just said, want to jump in and add a comment? Or?
I love this topic, and it's near and dear to my heart. My kids are in college, so you do all these things, and you wonder which are the things that actually matter. You're trying to get them to go away to college and hold on to their faith and what they're going to navigate. And so one of the simple things we did, and you know, because we do live in California, and we spend a lot of time in our car, and while I am a morning person, my kids are not morning people. So the thought of having breakfast and devotion, nor is my husband a morning person if I think about it, would never have worked for us. So it's, you know, it's that idea of what will work for you. And so we always, you know, on our way to school, would pray in the car. And that was always, it was very simple. How can I pray for you today? And sometimes they would have something, just like you said, sometimes they wouldn't. But I always prayed for their day. And I was sharing with the group yesterday, you know, so blessed now that my son's away at college. His thing, how can I pray for you today, Mom? I mean, almost every time he reaches out to me, text message this morning, how's your day, Mom? How can I pray for you? You know, that's what he's always asking back, but he's only asking it back because I asked it to him every day of his little life in a car, and it wasn't pretty or fancy. I didn't even think to put a proverb on. You know, I have a habit of praying. My kids now have a habit of praying. And I think the other thing we did was we do game night. I mean, is that crazy? So now we did game nights, and there's always worship music on. You know, cool contemporary worship music, voice in the background, because my husband always managed to put that on in there. And then as our kids got older, what I loved is their friends all came. Because we are a family that just played.
I just want to capture that for a second. Because what Shelley is saying is so important. You know, when Jesus discipled, he didn't say, okay, everybody sit down and take notes. It was they were doing regular life. And sometimes the most important element of discipleship is you just had great fun as a family.
Yeah.
Because that gives you psychological permission when you're serious. And we have to see that it's super important to build those fun times.
Well, that's the relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, when I thought about the people that I'm closest to. My younger brother and I are really close. I mean, we just have this incredible friendship. We go on a hiking trip every year, you know, multi-day backpacking trip. We do these things. We invest a lot in our relationship. And same thing with our kids. We spend this time, and it's just, I mean, I love the game. I think that's so good. Like in the video, you know, playing football, there's a thing that your child loves, and so you connect on that thing, and it's one way we can pursue, just like we pursue a romantic relationship, you know, it's like, what is this person like, and what's going to make them feel important? We can pursue our kids in that way, too, and set, again, that culture, that it's a game night, or football, or hunting, as mentioned yesterday, whatever, you know, your family looks like, again, but there's that relational piece that's just about building the relationship.
We found in our family one of the best opportunities for discipleship was camping. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a camp girl. I'm just not. And but Jeff and I decided early on that it was important to get our kids to talk, because discipleship, I think, is about what's going on in your heart. And looking for opportunities to get your kids to really talk and to share. And both of our kids are quiet, and they don't just come home and volunteer things. We would have to really seize those moments, and we found that camping, in fact, I think Dr. Dawson says, every family ought to go camping because something's going to go wrong when you camp.
Yeah.
There are those moments of when things are going to go wrong, then you kind of can sometimes get to a real conversation. I remember one time we were camping, and we were in a tent, and it started to rain. And so the tent started to leak, and so we kind of all gathered on one side of the tent, and then it started to leak even on that side of the tent, and we all ended up probably one corner of the tent because it was the only dry spot, and we just started talking about things, and those moments are rare, I think. And for our daughter, as she went into middle school, she started to just experience panic attacks, and It just was became very isolated, and I heard this idea from another family where I would give her a notebook and I would write her a note and lay it on her bed and let her just respond to it whenever she wanted to, and then she'd lay it on my bed. And it was a rule that nobody else in the family could look at it. It was just between me and her. But the things that came out in that notebook, that's how I found out that she was having panic attacks and struggling at school. And it's in those moments that then you can talk about how God moves in really painful situations. And with our son, sometimes he would be ready to talk and it would be at odd moments, sometimes at the most inconvenient moments. But we learned, drop everything and listen to the boy, because those opportunities don't come along.
Those are magic moments. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Thank you, Sharon. Hey, one of the questions was texted in, and Brenda, I want to see if you can take this one on. Families doing fine by worldly standards who don't see a need for Christ but are proud of their self-sufficiency, how do we show them their need for Christ?
In terms of showing, as church leaders, modeling for families in our church, you think?
It's hard to know just in terms of the question, but I think what it's getting at, and we all see this, is people who have, you know, they're kind of cultural Christians, but they think they're okay with God, and really they don't have time to put Jesus at the center of things.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, I'm a strong believer that culture beats out everything else in your home and in your church. You can have a great vision statement, or you can say what you want your family to be, but the day-by-day culture matters more than anything else. I think people are going to watch that and model, and they're going to sort of follow that. So as a pastor, I try to be careful all the time with my kids to make sure that two things happen. One is they don't feel like we're a pastoral family under the microscope. I want them to feel free not to be the ministry family or the pastor's kids. And having a wife who's a pastor's kid, you know, she reminds me of that often, so that helps. But the other is to let my kids know that I'm not just their pastor. I'm their dad. I'm their friend. And I think other families see that and express thanks for it. It's kind of like these topics that sort of remind me. I have two different uncles, and both of them are Christians. And one had three daughters, and every Friday night they would have what they call family altar. And he would get out a big Bible, and he would pretty much preach at them, you know, from this Bible. And he wanted to make sure they grew up Christian, but he was also very harsh. And it really drove a wedge. And as they went into adulthood, it all just disintegrated. And to this day, they don't have close relationships at all, and they're all different directions. My second uncle cultivated gentleness in his life, and he led his family spiritually as well. They did not have the Friday night family altar time. I mean, the first uncle even would do foot washings, so he got really, you know, I wash my kids' feet, but it's more for all of our safety. But, you know, talking about these things in a natural, gentle, as-you-go way, that's what people pick up on. And I think people observe a pastor and his family, and a pastor's kind of like this, I'm going to stand here and be sort of the wall in between. I'm not going to let my family be in the fishbowl, so to speak, but I am going to be authentic with my church and let them know here's what works, here's what doesn't work, and I'm just in my life going to cultivate a gentle grace and let that rub off on people.
That's good. I have one last question before we bring this session to an end. And it was actually a question yesterday. And in our car, we ended up talking about this. I'm going to give you just a second to think about it, because this is going to be more for Jim, Sherry, and Shelley. Knowing what you know now that your kids are grown, what would you change about parenting if you could go back in time? In other words, knowing what you know now, if you could go back. Let me just start. It's funny because my son was in the car with me this morning. He's here. He's going to meet with us in just a little while. And I said the two things I would do differently is I would have more kids, because I enjoyed them so much. I just had two. At first he goes, what do you mean? Was I that? You know, you needed other people rather than me. And then the second one was, I said, I think I would have chilled out a little bit more. So, Jim, let's start with you.
Yeah, that's a long list of things I would. Well, I can come up with a list of things that I think I would have totally done different. I would have chilled out a lot. I parented out of fear. Because of the path that I had taken, I felt that my father had been too gentle and not constraining enough, and that was the reason I had gone the direction I had gone. So I swung the pendulum too far the other way and became too strong. You know, and as a result of being too strong, and I'm going to build character in them, and I'm going to, I need to relax and be more gentle, and I needed to be more united with my wife. My wife and she's an amazing woman. It's the one that God wanted for me, but her and I have such strong personalities and such different views on parenting, and we really struggled to be united. And I would go back and work harder at that than we did. Now, of course, we survived, and all of our three kids know the Lord, and two want to go into ministry, or one is it, the other, you know, but there's just holes in the game that you look back and you wish you could change. I think the thing that I did right, which is harder for me to ever, they knew it wasn't a game. They knew I believed it. So there was a sincerity. I wasn't making mistakes on purpose. I was making mistakes 100%. Meaning I was all in on that mistake. And so there was no half measures of mistakes. But the unity between my wife and I, you know, and it's the hard thing for me is to watch some of the effects of that now. Because I see my kids not being as unified with their wives, and you're like, wow, that's wrong, but I did it. I set the standard for them. Now I can speak back into their life, and I'm going to do that, and they have some responsibility to listen to that and change, but here's the deal. I set some pretty deep ruts that they're going to slip into pretty easily, because what you model for them, whether you like it or not, people become. And so it's going to be harder work. I set them up to have to do harder work. It's less natural for them than I wish it would have been to be more united as a couple. So those are two things I would totally do different.
Thank you. Thanks for being transparent.
I have two granddaughters, who will turn 5 tomorrow, and that's why I'm leaving tomorrow to get back over that. But and one who is 2. And here's what I've noticed about myself with them. I'm so much more willing to jump into their spontaneous celebrations and to have fun. And I am learning through them that celebration is worship. And to slow down and to just let the celebration go. My granddaughter crawled up in my lap the other day and said a while back and said, Mimi, what can we celebrate today? And wow. I thought, I don't know, what can we celebrate today? Today's not a holiday, it's nobody's birthday. And we just started talking about things. And you know, to notice God's goodness is such an incredible gift, and to be able to celebrate that, and that is worship. And I really think that to notice good is to notice God. And I wish I would have done with my kids. We would have celebrations, and we'd celebrate their birthdays and holidays and things like that. But I think there's something in every day to be able to celebrate. And I wish I would have relaxed more and done that with my kids. And the other thing, I think looking back, and you hear people say this all the time, it's really true. I wish I would have worked less. My husband and I are both really hard workers, and we planted a church a while back, and we so wanted to, you know, just minister to people, and our kids were involved in that church plant, so we all worked together, but it was really hard, and I think, you know, both of my kids are in full-time ministry now, but I wish we would have just relaxed and had fun as a family more and worked less, even though it was ministry work. And I think in ministry, you can find yourself at a point where you have just worked yourself almost to death. And I just don't think, I don't think I'm going to stand in front of God and say, you know, and hear God say, good job on working so hard at this and that. I think he's going to say, you know, good job on what you did with your family. And I think that's a, it's a, it's a trap for people in ministry, I think.
Yeah.
I would say two things. When I wish I had started when my kids were younger, telling more stories of what I see God do, things that God says to me when I pray. So I started doing that later when I thought that they would actually understand it. And as I look back, if I had just woven that in more, I wonder what difference that would have made. I mean, we talked about that fan, you know, how do you help a family that thinks they have everything know that they don't? Well, if they can actually see God and what it is to have God in your life and the difference God makes, we do that through stories. And so if I had been a better storyteller of all those places, I mean, there's just so many places God just shows up. I see God do miraculous. I see God do the miraculous. Why am I not talking about that more and more? And I actually had a really good friend who did such a good job of that, and I would watch her do it, and I would not do it, and I would watch her do it. I'm thinking, why aren't I doing that? And so it was probably a little later down the road, I said, I need to do that. I need to tell some more stories of who God is and how I see him show up and the miraculous ways that he works, not only in my life, but in the lives of thousands of other people that I see. And then secondly, being a working mom and in ministry, and I am a morning person, and I am, unfortunately, a workaholic. And I'm also, my kids were always so important. I would find the time for my kids, and I would take the sacrifice of that on either end of sleep and my marriage. And so I have an amazing husband and a wonderful marriage of 28 years. I think some of the years when my kids were younger, I wish I had worked less and put more energy into my marriage to model that for my kids.
Wow. That's good.
That's awesome, you guys. Thank you for sharing that. That's so private. Isn't that a blessing just to hear that? Because this is the real life stuff, you know, that you look back and go, what could we do differently? Because here we are now, you know, and that's what we say is we can take this wisdom and we can really make changes. And some of it is just a lifestyle change, you know. And it's like we're not going to conform to the pattern of this world, right, that current, but we're going to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, that we're going to think God's way, and we're going to align ourselves with his plan. That's what we're trying to do in our homes, with our families, and so I tell families, it's like, if you're doing these things, your life is going to look different, and that's okay, that's good. You know what I mean? People are like, and sometimes, I mean, and you will take criticism from culture, sometimes from family and other people, but you go, well, this, that you do God's way, there's this blessing that comes when you're in the current of God's river and in his design. There's a blessing that comes from that.
In the retrospective on life, too, when you look back, you have to just begin every day with the end in mind. And as we saw in that video, you know, what's really going to matter in the end for us about our families and about our children and the legacy we love leave. Well, we are going to close here. I'm going to lead us in a prayer in just a second. And our plan is to break up into groups for you to process what we've been talking about and seek to talk about how it applies in your life. And so we have some men here. In fact, I'm going to recruit Brandon Ginden, if I can, to lead the discussion for the section in the back there, Brandon, if that'd be all right. The questions are on the back of the handout. I know, Ben, you helped lead a group yesterday. Could you do that again with maybe between you and David Sanders? Will you you and Ben divide up this group here, and Gary, if you lead that group there. Thanks, everybody. Oh, actually, I said I'd lead us in a prayer, and I really want to do that after this session. God, I pray for every one of us who are here that the images and the meaning behind that video clip called Follow Me, that for each of us, when we are on our deathbed, we see our children and grandchildren. Help us to parent for that day, that on that day, we can look into their eyes with a sense that you've worked a miracle in our family's lives, that we trust and follow Jesus together and look forward to being together on the other side. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
These videos make me cry. And they make me cry because mostly the season of life I'm in, I'm through the season of having kids at home. They come home and visit between calls. And so it just makes it so poignant to me what we're talking about and why it matters for us as the church to be a partner with families. And so I know some of you are pastors and leaders in the church. I think most all of us are parents or have parents. And so you understand the role that parenting and discipleship in the home has and how critical it is that the church be a partner. And so I love, as Bobby was talking about that, and Jason was talking about that, I said, what does it look like for the church to partner? And even if you're not in a role in your church to make those partnerships happen, I hope that you'll take what we're talking about and use your voice to create that to happen in your church. Because sometimes what your church is waiting for is for someone like you to come along and raise your hand and say, I want to partner and help this happen in our church because it matters. I was recently talking to a missionary from New Zealand, and things in New Zealand are dramatically different than they are in North America. And I'm hope beyond hope that we don't end up exactly where they are, though many of us think that we will become more and more like New Zealand, where and a lot of the world, where you don't have vibrant homes who love the Lord and who live their life and keep families who go to church. And so as we look at families and other cultures, we realize the importance of what it is we are doing as parents today between that ages of 4 and 14. So there's a lot of things I did before my kids were 4. I don't know that it was super successful, but it's a good time to try it out, is what I think. You can try things and go, that felt really good, that felt really lame, I'm not going to do that. Because when they start to get to be 4, they remember the things you do. I'm shocked the things that my kids tell me they remember that I do, now that they look back, the things I did. And so if we look at that age group of 4 to 14, how do we as a church partner with our families to make disciples in our home? And so I'm going to talk about this a lot from the standpoint of the church's role. We've talked about what it looks like pretty much, you know, in the family yesterday and today. But really, how does the church become that partner? The family has so much pressure on it. As a parent, we have so much pressure on us to make sure that our kids, that we did the right sports, that they got into the right colleges, that they had good friends, and then we had conversations about sex, and we had conversations about money, and you're having all these conversations. And the most important thing to me as I look back and even looking forward was that they would know Jesus. Because if I did all those things, but they didn't have eternal salvation, they didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, when they went away to college, what good would it be that they got into a great college? And I think I felt even more pressure of it as a pastor. What good would it be that I had given my life's work to serving a community if my children didn't know the Lord? And so I really look at the church. I want the church to be looked at as a partner for families. How do we equip parents? How do we equip them, first of all, to be discipled, to understand the value of being in community with others, of living that out, of knowing God's word, of being held accountable? How do we create environments for parents, and even before their parents, to live in authentic community? How do we partner when for with families so that we can create great experiences in our churches that families want to be a part of. And Jason and I were talking about this. You know, when they're little, they think it's pretty fun to go anywhere with you. We're going to Home Depot. Yay! You know? We're going to a garage sale. Awesome! You try that at like 13, 14, they're just like, my parents are lame and I am not going to those places with you. And it doesn't matter if it's Home Depot or church. It's got to be compelling when they get to be in those teenage and high school years. So how do we create compelling gatherings for families, for students, that they want to be here, they want to be about what we want to be about, which is helping them to grow in the Lord? How do we provide great experiences? How do we create great youth ministry, internship programs? I think those are all questions that we need to be asking ourselves as leaders in the church or members of a church. Because all those things matter and they pay dividends. As I look back, I'm so grateful for the environment that our church created for families, for my family, for my kids. And it doesn't matter that I was a pastor on staff. It was a place they wanted to come, mostly because it was a fun place to be. There weren't a lot of sacred rules that existed around buildings and around spaces. So I love the passage in Acts chapter 2, and I just want to read it because I just think it's so powerful. I can juggle all this. When I think of what do I want an authentic community of people to look like, what do I want a life group to look like, what do I want a family group to look like, I always go into Acts chapter 2, verse 42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together, and they had everything in common, their property and possessions, and gave to anyone who was in need. Every day they continued to meet together at the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And when I think of like authentic community, when I think of what do I want to be a part of and what do I want the people in my church to be a part of, that's a picture of what I want life groups or small groups or community groups to look like. I want there to be something happening in that group besides just great dessert. Have you ever been in that group where it just had great dessert? I was in a small group once where it kind of became so much about dessert. And I kind of, my husband, we kind of looked at, I don't think this is working anymore. It's got to be about being about what God's about, right? The awe and wonder of who God is, of seeing prayer answered, of opening His Word, of living our lives around that. If, as parents, if we don't have that kind of community, authentic, real community, where we watch God work in our lives and we walk alongside others where God is showing up, our kids aren't going to want to be in church. They're not going to want to be in community groups. So we've got to at first model and create that for our people. Because our kids want to be a part of things that they see us growing and things impacting us. And as we create those places for people, we're modeling, just like the video, two videos ago, mm-hmm. You know, we're modeling that for our families. So to raise our kids to love the Lord, we have to raise adults who love the Lord, which goes beyond coming to church once a week. And I think we talked about that. Jim did a great job talking about that yesterday. It's like, we don't make disciples. We have a lot of people who come to church and they check off a box and they think that's what they're supposed to do. Okay, I went to church, so everything's good in my life, right? But we've got to create environments and community where people can be honest and real and authentic. They can share the good and the bad. Our kids know when our life is bad. They know when things are difficult in our life. They knew when my husband was unemployed in a season of our life, and they watched our life group bring us food. They watched school uniforms get dropped off on the front porch. Didn't know who they came from, but our kids were going to school and they needed school clothes, and my husband was unemployed. And I don't know that, you know, we didn't even ask for that need. but they came and they brought it. Those things are things when I look back that made a really strong impression on my kids and wanting to be a part of community in their life. I was recently talking to my 20-year-old son in college, and his prayer request going away to college, of all the things he could ask for, Mom, pray that I'd have good friends and that I'd find a good Bible study group. I mean, you gotta love that from a 20-year-old, because he knows that that matters. Because the church modeled that for him. The church modeled that for him. I love the passage which we looked at and dedicated in Hebrews 10:23-25. It says, don't stop meeting together. We don't meet together on the weekend. We come and we leave. We say hello. And we always ask, how is everyone, right? How are you? Good, great. But we're really not connecting. And so as a church, our number one strategy has got to be to have authentic community groups based on God's word, based on prayer, based on shared experiences, based on serving together, that our lives would be changed and our kids would be a part of that. So for 13 years, I was in a community group with families, and our kids were always with us. You know, while they weren't there necessarily when we were doing our Bible study and our prayer time, we always had celebrations together. And what I love that model for kids is it models mentoring. When you grow up and when you have that as a parent, your kids know people to go to when they can't go to you. And I think that is super important. We all want our kids to have these amazing mentors in their life. Well, the kids that I've mentored were the kids whose parents were in my life group. I can't tell you how many of them have called me when their life has been in a ditch because I knew I was in a safe place. I can't tell you how many of them have called me when they need a job reference or a college letter of recommendation written. I've done a lot of those. But you know, it's not the parents calling me, it's the kids calling me because I was around, because I was visible, because our church created spaces for us to do life together and place an importance on our ability to do that. So that power of community and that safety is so critical. And we have to model that as pastors. And I think we have to model that in weekends. We have to tell those stories of the difference it makes to be in community. It has to be a part of your overall strategy. Your strategy for raising up healthy families can't just be that you have a children's ministry, which Sherry and I were talking about a little bit ago. You can't just have children's ministry. You've got to minister to the whole family. And you've got to minister to parents in order to minister to families. There was a young woman who recently sent me a text message, probably 2 weeks ago. Her mom passed away in June. And her text message said, I need a community of women in my life like my mom had. Can you help me? So I love her because the woman, her mom, was a friend of mine. And I met this family their first week at Mariners Church. And they came to the classic, you know, first place you always go, how do we get involved? And it's the way to get involved. You've got to get beyond Sunday. You've got to get in a community group. And so they got into Rooted. They got into a community group. In that community group, 2 years in, she was diagnosed with cancer. And you just watch this community of families minister endlessly to this family. And be willing to have these really crazy, difficult conversations. Why isn't God healing me? What's it going to be like to die? What's going to happen to my family? How do I say goodbye to my kids? So here's a woman looking at her, not her pastor. She's looking at a group of six families saying, how do I have these conversations? How do I have these conversations? And what her daughter took away from it, so she went through an incredible loss, incredible anger, all the emotions, of course, we would all go through losing her mom. At the end of the day, what this young 20-year-old girl took away was, I need that. I need a place where I can be real, where I can be cared for, and I can be honest. And so those are things that we need to create in our churches. Our kids today live in a culture that is so challenging. The bullying, the texting, the social media, the pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's so much pain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even as a parent, I mean, my kids went through stuff, and I prayed and prayed, Lord, please don't, like, why wouldn't you protect my kid from that? And you're like, yeah, I know you use all things together for good for those. And you're just like, really? Mm-hmm. You know, I watched what my kids went through. And you know what they loved? Was the church. And they loved the church because the church created a place for them that they could come. And I think this is kind of unique. Because we have to think, we all have youth ministry in our churches. We have places for our students. But where are we inviting them in? To our worlds. Where are we inviting them in? We had just built a bunch of new buildings here a couple, well, 10 years ago. We built a bunch of new buildings. We're sitting in them right now. And you know that there's a certain percent of our population that considered these buildings quite sacred because we worked really hard for the money to build these buildings. But the tone for how this campus is used was set by a lead pastor who said, I want kids here. They can skateboard here. They can, I think my favorite conversation with our high school pastor was, I think I just bought it's like some kind of a portable ashtray thing because there were some kids coming on campus who smoked cigarettes and we were tied our cigarette butts on the campus. So instead of saying, no, you're not welcome here, he bought like this goofy ashtray for them. Now there's parents who thought that was a really bad idea. There's parents here, or people, who thought it was a bad idea that there was loud music playing on the church campus. It's a bad idea there's skateboards. There's a lot of things that people thought were a really bad idea for these pretty buildings. But there was a lead pastor who said, I want the youth to make this their home. I love when my kids come on this campus, the pastors, we literally went on a campaign to be able to reach our youth, where we are teaching a leadership gatherings, when you walk by someone who's in there, you know, in those teenage years, would you just stop and say, hi, how are you? Hi, how are you? We're glad you're here. Would you make them feel welcome?
That's good.
Would you make them feel welcome? What does that look like at your church? How can you create spaces that your students would feel welcome? Because if we create a place where we love to be as parents, but our kids won't come with us, what have we really created for their future? What have we really created for their future? Other things that we do that I love, we have a phenomenal internship program. Every summer, we have so many interns. If you want to be an intern, no matter what your talent is, we will find a place for you to be here. And every Wednesday for 2 hours, we minister to our interns. And we teach them and take them through all the leadership classes that we take our staff through. And you talk to these kids, and you're seeing kids decide to go into ministry because their parents made them, they needed an internship. Why? For their resume for college. Great way to get high school students on your campus is to create a super compelling internship for your summer because they all need to put unique things on their resume for their college resumes. We have homework clubs and soccer clubs. The other thing we do that I love is we created a mission trip to Sri Lanka for leaders, and it was led by students. So we took 20 students, let them raise money to do a leadership conference for 100 students in Sri Lanka with 20 different local, or 20 different nations over there. So they raised the money so that it would be free for the students in Sri Lanka. They raised their support, and they went with our senior pastor, our children's pastor, and our high school pastor. That changed their life. But not more importantly, but in addition, when they came back, every week, we had one of those students stand up front in the weekend worship services and tell the church what they did, how God showed up, and then they led the entire church in a prayer for that nation. And I think about that. I think about my 77-year-old father who's not as culturally sensitive as I'd like him to be, maybe a little unaware of some of the things going on in the world. Well, he sits in our weekend worship service. And I'm watching a 16-year-old girl who raised the money to go to Sri Lanka, changed her life, and she's now praying for another country and the students in that country. And my dad is being led in prayer by her. And it was amazing how powerful it was. How do we create spaces for our kids to win? Where they feel like they're as much a part of the church as we are. It creates a different conversation for the families. How do we create experiences that are based in experiential learning, not just knowledge? What does it look like to create experiences for families and help them to be able to talk about them? So I love we were talking about, you know, helping families to tell the story of what they saw God doing when they're serving. We're really helping them to frame that in God language. When they can see where God showed up, so they know their experience, but when we coach them as leaders, we can coach them to see where God showed up. And all of a sudden, they're going to school, or a family's going, a dad's going to work, and they're telling the God story, not just the story. I went and served the homeless this weekend, but oh my gosh, I saw God show up this weekend when I did blah, blah, blah. You know, they're telling the God story. And all of a sudden, it's impacting their lives. It's impacting the community. In today's world, we remember about 20% of what we hear, which is super encouraging for those of us who've been sitting up here talking to you, right? But we remember what we experience. So when we look at ministry, whether it's to adults or to youth or family, we've got to look at what are the shared experiences that we are creating. Because that's what gets passed on. And how are we framing those so that they get passed on? People remember what they experience. I was talking to my daughter, my 22-year-old daughter. What impacted you most about the church? Like, do I want to ask this question? And I've done this to my poor kids their whole life. I'm going to go speak at moms. You know, what should I tell the moms that you, what do moms need to know? And so they always tell me these great things they want me to pass on. And so I was talking to my daughter about this conversation. You know, where did the church get it right? What did we do as parents that helped you see God? And she says, Mom, it was the family missions trips. She says that everything we did was the family missions trips. And I'm going to tell you, when our kids were four, where we're located, we were driving them to Mexico and we were serving at an orphanage. And it's how we roll. It's what we do. You know, once a month, we gather food. And everyone in the neighborhood would help bring food. And our life group, we banded together and adopted an orphanage in Mexico. And so the church didn't organize this. It's our life group that organized this. And we'd have one family where all the food was in their garage. And you just show up every day and you could see the food show up on the door. And then we'd get there 5 a.m, we'd load up cars, we'd buy great donuts, and away all these families would go to Mexico. And these little kids, you know, unloading cars, having an experience and watching God show
up.
And then we moved into taking mission trips to Peru. I remember watching a dad who's a big, big executive. And his kids kind of thought of him as untouchable because everyone around him treated him as untouchable. And so it wasn't a great relationship. But this dad was a great dad. He just didn't have a place where his kids could see him the way he loved the Lord. And I remember looking at him sitting on the ground putting together a wheelchair. And I remember his daughters kind of looking at him a little skeptical. And I love the privilege of saying to his two daughters, look at your dad. How do we as a church help make dads heroes? I want every dad to be a hero. When I can point out when a dad's serving, when a dad's doing something, because, you know, no one else could say that, but I could say it. Look at your dad. Is that so cool? Later that day, that dad's on the roof of this, you know, he's the dad who's literally working the hardest. He's on the roof of this truck and unloading stuff. I'm like, look at your dad. It changed the relationship that these two girls had with their dad. He's a single dad. But he took him on a missions trip, gave up time, cost him a bunch of money because he didn't choose to raise support, but it changed his family. How do we create experiences through serving for our families? How do we create experiences for our dads to let their kids see them? I think there's this great partnership that we can have as parents, as a church with our parents and helping to create those things. So I love, I'll just close with that. My daughter's, you know, two last things. She said, you know, Mom, when we are in Peru and I've watched those people and how they love Jesus, my daughter speaks no Spanish, and she's like, I didn't really know what was being said a lot, but I knew they loved the same Jesus I loved, And my faith was stronger than my faith, and it increased my faith. And then I was talking to my son, and our church did a great job with our kids. My son, who was the perfect one, more or less, of the two of my children, got himself in a heap of trouble 2.5 years ago. You know, the first place he wanted to come, Mom, can I come to church? It still makes me emotional. Can I come to church? I said, I can think of no better place for you to be right now. And he didn't want to come to the buildings. He wanted to come be on the third floor with our pastors because he knew they wouldn't judge him. He knew they'd love him. And I remember Kenton, our senior pastor, running into him, and he knew what happened because it was such a great scenario where I was a pastor who had to call and say, hey, just in case this hits the papers, this is what's going on in my son's life right now. And when he saw my son, he said, you know now. He says, you did a stupid thing, didn't you? He's like, yes. He says, but you know now why you need the church. And you never knew before, but you know right now. And my son is looking at our senior pastor like, I have no idea what I'm supposed to say, so I'm just going to nod. He says, do you know why? And he's kind of like, I'm supposed to know the answer. And I know. He said, because we're going to pray for you. And right now, God's the one who can help you. And that was like this pivotal turning point for my son. But it started with the pastor always making space for kids to feel welcome. It started with the church being willing to create community and shared experiences. It created with a value system of kids being welcome and needing to be here.
What a great vision. Wow, what a great vision, though, of how the church partners.
Yeah.
No, you're sitting there talking, you know what I'm thinking? Man, I wish every church in the country could be just like that. So the kids growing up, that's what they would experience. Because as you said, it's about the transformative experiences and what they're grounded in. Well, who wants to jump in?
I have to say, I love the ashtray story. Because I served in a church that had a big hill, and when it was snow, the whole town wanted to show up in a sled. And all of our deacons, and they were kind of the opposite. They wanted signs up that say, you know, keep your ash out of here, or something like that. It was good to hear. It's just not.
It has a delayed response there.
Ah, that's good.
Keep your ash out.
Jim, you spent years before you planted Real Life Ministries in student ministry. So give us some reflections in terms of how the kids really need a church community doing some of the things Shelley was just talking about.
Well, they don't need a church community as church is typically defined. They don't need that.
Right.
They need a church community to find it. And that's very rare. So, churches tend to want to protect their things, their sacred things, their sacred places. And it's because spirituality is defined as a destination and an event. So it's got to be sacred. And it's because they haven't been discipled. Spiritual maturity isn't what you do in an event. It's relationships you have. We always talk about it, you know, it's not the building, it's the people, but what, you know, it's really what they mean by is what the people do when they get to the building, rather than what the people do. You don't go to church, you are the church, and that happens in a building when you go to an event, but it's so much more about what happens outside of that. So I think church leaders need to decide that they're going to pursue wealth. And what I mean by wealth is, if you go to Ecclesiastes 4, he says there was a man who had plenty of wealth, plenty of work, but he was miserable. And he says, what a miserable business. Because he had neither friend nor brother. And then it says, two are better than one. And then it starts to, you know, again, people like to use that as a marriage text, but it's not a marriage text. Because he goes, three are better than two. at the end. So a cord of three strands is not easily broken. So that's not a marriage text. But just this understanding of wealth is relationship. And I'm going to invest in spiritual wealth, my walk with God and my relationship with others. I'm going to become wealthy as God intended wealth, relationally. Again, I believe every person was created for a relationship, and whether they know it or they don't know it, that's what they're created for. And when they see it, it's attractive. And kids are going to be, they're going to go out into the world and they're going to chase other things. And when life gets rough, do they have the memory of relationship in their mind to come back to? A building will not bring them back. A doctrine by itself will not bring them back to the Lord. That's why most people, they'll leave the church. They'll find out the world's broken, but they won't come back to the church. But if they had spiritual relationships, they were loved there. They were, you know, and they saw their parents have that, these ropes that held their parents fast when the world got crazy. When they've tried everything else, they can remember a place and a time where they can remember some people that had it together in a life that they wanted. Like the little girl story you're telling. You know, life's crazy and I want what she had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that draws them back. So whether it's youth ministry kids or, you know, sin by its very nature, the devil by its very nature, will destroy, by his very nature, will destroy your capacity for relationship. If God is a relational God, the devil is anti-relational. Mm-hmm. And everything he will entice you to do will destroy relationship.
That's right.
Yep.
Every sin is, every law God ever gave was either a promotion of or a protection of relationship. So mm-hmm. the devil is constantly enticing you to destroy the very thing you were designed to have.
Yeah.
And so, these kids, what they need is to see that. To see when you make a mistake, you're loved there. And they're not gonna drive you to the ground. They want to see, they want to help you. They don't want to proudly accuse your parents because they weren't good enough parents. When my son, as I said, I went the other direction. I became harder. And my son, my oldest son decided he'd go the way that I went. He was going to go out and find the world and chase all those things. And the problem is, you know, I was an alcoholic, but the stuff that people use today is much more addictive, much quicker. And he ended up going through two rehab programs in a homeless shelter. I had to eventually leave him on the street. And it was agonizing for me. And, you know, I've got this church that's growing like crazy and God's doing all this stuff, but I could care less. I got to the place where I'm like, you know, I don't care. I love my son, and if I wouldn't have made it through that time, if I had to be perfect, or I had to not be angry at God, I had to, you know, if I couldn't be real and honest and have a relationship that sustained me, you know, a lot of us, we say, you know, God will sustain you through the rough times. Well, it depends on what you mean. God's plan for sustaining you through the rough times is your believing friends. So we want God to sustain us, but we don't want to have relationships. Well, God's methodology for sustaining us is relationship.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And so Christians who don't have relationship are, they're saying no to God's methodology for getting through stuff. So these friends came around me and supported me, and I didn't have to be perfect. I even offered my resignation. You know, we were the church of the century in our movement. And, or the decade, excuse me. And I didn't care. So what? I was losing my son. And what got me through all of that was these relationships. And when my life was crazy, I had ropes. And my son saw those ropes. And he knew I had ropes all the way through. And his life led him to, you know, all these friends he thought he had. They didn't come to the homeless shelter. They didn't go to the rehab centers. They didn't support him. They were doing, you know, all these relationships he thought he had weren't real. But he knew where to come back to. And the church people, same thing. They weren't proudly pointing at their father and accusing me and saying things. They were praying and supporting.
And when they saw him, they were so happy to see him. And they were there to minister when he was ready to be ministered to. When he hit bottom, they were there to help him up and start him again. And you want to have a great youth ministry. A lot of churches are thinking of the same way they think about church. You want to reach a lot of people, have a great service, have a great speaker, have a great this. And so we need to have great youth events built around attraction and all those things. You want those kids to hold fast and have something to come back to. Build relationship with the parents, build relationship in the church. And when the world does what it does, leaves you empty and thirsty, they will go, I know where to go back to. But if they came from a church where they were in it, but they were still empty and thirsty, they'll go, I'm not going back there. I already tried that.
That's right.
They were inoculated. Yeah. They got a little taste of something to make sure they didn't get the real thing.
Yeah.
And so this concept of working on the most important things. Don't let the show, the youth show, the children's show, the pastoral show, take 90% of your time. Because the show is not going to make the difference.
Here, that's so it's the relationships.
Yeah.
It's the relationships with people trying to trust and follow Jesus together. That's good. By the way, just real practically, for everybody who is a parent, one of the most strategically important things you can do is exactly what Jim's talking about and what Shelley talked about, but to be intentional about it. And that is actually ask other parents to help you with your kids.
Could I say something about this? You don't know this about Bobby, but my son came to know the Lord, has a child outside of wedlock. Now he's married. And Bobby calls me up on the phone, and Chris is trying to get his life together. That's my son's name. And he says, hey, why don't you let my son, your son be an intern at our church for the next 4 months?
That's good.
So Bobby had my son go clear across the United States, put him up, paid him, got him away from his old friends, helped him build new friends. You know, see, that's relationship where they're not just going, you know, hey, I'm praying for you. He's like, what can I do? My son loves the church. Now he's in ministry. He's a youth minister of church. He loves the church. Why does he love the church? The church loved him.
And, Jim is talking about me. Actually, Jim first did that for my son when he was trying to figure out some things. So Chad went and did an internship at Real Life Ministries. David Sanders is here. Will you raise your hand? So David Sanders and I, we had our kids together, and we covenanted together. The Sanders prayed for our kids. We prayed for the Sanders kids. My son, who's going to be here in a few minutes, when he has questions about life and things like that, he will call David Sanders because he's got a relationship with him. And that's what we're doing. We've got to, you know, it's really at the end of the day, the real fruit of Christ-likeness is love. And it's loving each other and loving our kids and being in community together like that.
That's discipleship. I hope you heard that. When you think about discipleship, the first thing comes is education, doctrine, even teaching them to lead a small group, skill sets. That's all part of it. But that is not the root of discipleship. It's relationship, loving God and loving others. So make disciples, but have the right understanding of what discipleship is.
That's absolutely yep. Right. Sherry, I'd love to have you weigh in on this.
Yeah, this has just made me think of my own kids. I remember my son in middle school was in a small group, and his small group leader was just a volunteer at our church. And I used to have to go drive my son to small group, and it was a pain in the rear end, you know, because you just didn't have time for that as a parent. But I remember one night going to pick him up at small group, and it was all middle school boys. And so I would get there at 8:30, and the boys would usually just, you know, spill out of this house of this volunteer, and they didn't come out at 8:30 one night. And so I walked up to the door, and their storm door, you could see through the door, and at first it alarmed me because all of these middle school boys, there's about 13 of them, were laying on their face on the floor, and I thought, oh, there's been a mass murder.
And I understand, because they're junior high.
Or the smell of their feet made everyone pass out, you know. They were praying, and their youth pastor, their middle school pastor, just a volunteer, was walking around among and praying out loud, and then these boys would take turns praying. And I stood there for a few minutes, and I thought, I have no right to be, you know, irritated, you know, because they're not done on time. And I just went back out to my car, and I thought, I will sit here as long as it takes, you know, for my son to lay there on his face and pray. And it was because of the relationship that this volunteer had with my son. He literally loved him so much that my son would go and spend, you know, an evening at this small group. And today, this volunteer is a church planter, and my son is on his staff and in the church plant. And it's because of years and years and years of relationship, and our church structured that. Our church made positively sure that there were multiple opportunities for the kids, my kids, to be in a small group. And, you know, I talk with pastors all the time about what is your strategy for family discipleship? What is your strategy for that? And a lot of pastors will say, well, you know, we have children's ministry or we have youth ministry. Those things are great. You need those things. But I think within that, you need a strategy of how you will come alongside parents and help them love their kids so much that their kids will, you know, as we said, they'll stray, but then they'll come back. And it's just so critically important. I'm a huge fan of Orange Family Ministry. The video that we saw earlier was made by Orange, and they talk all the time about a strategy for families. And I remember going to one of their conferences and having a transformational moment. I was a children's pastor on staff at my church, and they talked in this conference about, as a children's pastor, it is not your job to bring kids to Christ. And I thought, well, of course it is. That's what they pay me for. No, that's not my job, I began to realize. It was my job to come alongside mom and dad and help them talk with their kid and have those conversations. And it happens through these things that we structure as a church. Family experiences, small group experiences. And we set the parent up to be able to have those experiences with their kids.
Oh, that's good. Jason, why don't you go ahead and jump in here?
I think my microphone's not working here.
I'll borrow this one. I think just this picture of what we're talking about is having other adults. Everybody's touched on this, but there's a book called Sticky Faith, and like Faith That Sticks. We're talking about kids leaving the church. Like what makes them stay? So the research that was done, and this is, of course, these are the real life stories of it, you know, but there are other adults in our kids' lives, or in the kids' lives, that are true followers of Jesus, that are speaking into their lives, that care about them, that love them. Some of the conversations that maybe people in their teens don't feel like they can have with their parents. Shelly, you have someone that's calling you that's that age, you know, that maybe you're the friend of their parent. You know, we have in our family, I mean, I think to encourage families to be strategic about that. You know, but my brother, our kid's uncle Josh, and he's the fun uncle. He's uncle with the ski boat and the toys and the exciting things, but he loves Jesus. He's a worshiper. And I know we've set up our lives with each other's kids that they can talk. But I know our kids, well, I'm going to talk to Uncle Josh about this. Well, like, you talk to Uncle Josh about this. I want them to talk to their Uncle Josh. Maybe they can talk to me about it. And maybe sometimes if I do need to be corrected as a dad, my brother will also correct me. We have that kind of relationship, but really it's aligning yourself with those other families and caring for each other, and that is the church, how we care for each other's families, how we speak into, so I think for us to be speaking into other kids' lives, our friends' kids, and I always try to encourage when we do our seed events, is for, we want families to build relationships within the church. You know, of course, that happens in life through small groups, but it just happens in life. Like, hey, you need to have other families, like you're talking about the Sanders family.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, these are families, we're on this, we're all sojourners, ultimately, and on this sojourn that we're heading through with our families, with kids you know, oftentimes in similar ages or students, families that are beyond you, but like we're on this journey together.
Yeah.
We're going to help each other. We're going to pray for each other. We're going to, when it gets crazy, we're going to try to get in there and go, hey, we're here. How can we help? I mean, I love what you're saying, Jim. I mean, like, how can we do that?
Let me just say this, if I can, for everybody here. You know, you come to a thing like this, and we hear these things, and we're hoping to get stuff that can help us. Can I tell you what I'm about to tell you right now, which they've all talked about, I think is one of the single most important things you can do, especially when your kids hit their teenage years. Recruit people early and ask them to help you disciple your kids. Like, don't just hope it happens, but actually find families. Here's what we did. We did this when we were in Canada with my kids when they were really small. We found some people, and we actually would meet with them. First, we watched them to make sure they were about what we were about, and so it was honest and authentic. But we actually met with them and said, can we help each other?
Yeah.
So like when our kids were small, we would have sleepovers. My kids would have sleepovers with their kids. You know how you get that phase, are we going to do the sleepover thing or not? No, we would intentionally start doing that. We cultivate their friendships, and then when they go to church, it's like, oh, they're getting to see their friends. And the parents of their kids are they know my kids. And then when we moved from Calgary to Nashville, that's what we saw with David and Susan Sanders. But here's the takeaway. Intentionally find people who you see discipling their kids the way you want to disciple your kids. Build relationships. Look for good chemistry, but build relationships intentionally with them where you actually agree.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do with one another.
Absolutely.
And that will pay huge dividends for you.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to, if anybody want to jump in here, because I'm going to change the course a little bit.
I'm just going to jump in on that point. While that is a great strategy for making disciples and with your kids, it's also a strategy that helps your marriage.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we talk so much about discipling our kids, but if our marriage falls apart, the whole thing is somewhat unraveled. So
yeah.
Also making sure that you're looking at your marriage in that same relationship.
Oh, that's very good. Yeah, sometimes guys can help another guy stay on the straight and narrow, or a woman help another woman. Especially as the Bible says, you know, talking about multi-generational things. We had a conversation about that last night. Older people helping younger people to actually do that is what the Bible envisions. Well, one of the last things I want us to talk about is, I do want us to finish on hope, because there's a tremendous hope story here that I want to draw us back to as we come to a close. But there are also people here, or people listening, and you're saying, you know, what you guys are talking about, that sounds really good, but right now my kids are far, and I don't know what to do. So if we could just spend a few minutes talking to those parents whose hearts are broken, who look at things and their kids don't want to go to church, their kids don't want to be involved, their kids are still at home, but the kids don't care. What are some things you all would say?
You know, I pastored a church in Arkansas that had a pretty decent student ministry. There was a guy who was a member with his two sons. Their mom, his wife, had died of cancer. And when that happened, he was pastoring a church that had no other students, no other kids. It was very, very traditional. His two sons didn't relate to it at all. And he made the decision to leave vocational ministry to get his two sons into a church where they had people that would invest in and pour in their lives. And it really sparked a thought in me for parents who are struggling, for kids who don't have parents, who don't have Christian parents, for single moms, single dads. I think it's important kind of to maybe lump all that together and
say,
a lot of what we have said is about the church partnering with nuclear families. And the only caution is, don't neglect letting your church be the only family that some people have. They don't have moms, they don't have dads. They don't, you know, we need to be adopting all the time. And so I think, like, when I'm a pastor, my 5-year-old's going through a real rebellious phase right now. and does, you know, does, he's committed some crimes. And when I'm thinking about that, I'm thinking I want other churches to take up the slack. I don't want to fall in the trap and think, well, I'm a pastor. He's got to love me. He's got to love my church. He's got to do my thing. I want the church as a whole to be there for my kids, even if I let them down or even if they won't listen to me. I think the church as a whole, yeah, we need to equip and help nuclear families. Absolutely. We're struggling desperately to do that. But we also can't forget to be the family for the families. So.
Boy, that is so true. Thank you.
I like that you touched on finding the church that they all go to. I went through a season when my daughter was in junior high. She didn't want to come to our church. Now, we always did church as a family. And it was really hard for me to say, what do you mean you don't want to go to our church? It's where our family is. But there was another church that just worked better for her. And it was another pastor on staff saying, it's one God. Like, let her go where, if she's comfortable there, let her go there. And so it was interesting, me letting go, like, okay. And I think as a parent, through some really tough seasons of parenting, prayer, you know, and just reminding yourself, God loves your kids more than you do. God cares about their salvation more than you do. Sometimes I have to ask God, are you sure? Because it's looking pretty bad down here. But, you know, he loves them more than you do.
That's good. So these are becoming last words from each of you, just in terms of exhortation for those on the fringe. Jason, if I can turn to you, and then we'll share it with you.
Okay. I mean, I just say this by way of encouragement. I think for families, it's like always, one thing is families feel like there's so many things on them. When we talked about, you know, kind of coming back to grace, and just for parents, one of the things I feel like the Lord has called the Seeds Ministry to do is just to encourage families, you know, and wherever they are. And I am one of those kids that I got saved at a church camp, and I started going, I got adopted by a church, and I was coming to church by myself. And I just showed up, and they're like, well, you're going to come to church? I'm like, yeah, that's what you do. I'm a follower of Jesus now, so I started going to church. First Baptist Church, Twin Falls, Idaho.
That's awesome.
And I showed up, and I got adopted into that church. And then my, you know, and my mom actually grew up, my granddad was a Methodist minister. My mom had fallen away, and my dad wasn't a believer, but then my mom started to come. My brother became a missionary. God did a work in my life that spread, you know. So I definitely think it's so important. But wherever people are as a family, you know, to say, we are for you. You're not alone. You know, that the church, when we talk about, because
right.
I think a theme here that that's going to be one of my takeaways is we need to continue to strive for real relationships.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I always tell parents that parenting is hard.
Yeah.
But things that matter are hard. We study, we learn, we do all these things, and they're hard for things that mean so much less. And relationships are hard. Guess what? Newsflash, you have to work at relationships. That's the design, right? That's how we mature. And that is within our family, dude, because we can't trick our family because they're there. They get to see us in first thing in the morning, last thing at night, and everywhere in between, you know.
Right.
But we can be in authentic relationship, and we can encourage families. We can be real with each other and say, we all struggle. Every leader struggles, every person. We can share those things, but we can say, but our God is faithful, and when we align ourselves with God's design, there's a blessing that comes. And Jesus said, you know, we talk about the Great Commission for applying that in your home. At the end, Jesus said, and I will be with you always.
That's good.
And as we talk about that, as we encourage families, we say, Jesus is with you. He is for you. He is fighting for you. He is for you in this. This is his plan. And in the most difficult seasons of your life, that he will walk you and carry you and use those things. So I just think it's important for us as church leaders, church planners, too, to, you know, families need to be encouraged. They really do in the journey, because the task is too big for us as parents. We need God. If God doesn't show up, it's not going to work.
Well, it's the promise of Jesus, right? I'll be with you always to the end of the age. He is with us. The things that we care about, the kingdom of God, he's with us even when we can't see it.
Yeah.
And we rely on him for his grace.
Yeah. I know we talked about this before, but I really think transparency on the part of the leader, whether it's a senior pastor or just a leader in the church, to talk about discipleship in your family, and I think discipleship in your family is hard, and I think one of the best things you can do is just get really honest about it's hard in your family too. Jeff and I were talking one time at a marriage retreat about we've been married 33 years and we've been in ministry all of those years, but it wasn't until just the 10 years that Jeff and I actually would start praying out loud with each other in the morning. And why didn't we do that before? Well, we were busy, and actually, honestly, though, it was a little uncomfortable. It was a little itchy. And we started talking about that at a marriage retreat, and we had, you know, families come up to us afterwards and say, me too. It's just, it's uncomfortable. And I think transparency on the part of a leader speaks very loudly. When you talk about, you know what, we don't do family discipleship perfect either. We mess up and it's uncomfortable and we try things and it doesn't really work, but a few of the things that we do try works. And I think that's very powerful to let the people in your church see how family discipleship works in your family, but just to be real and real about it and talk about the hard things too.
That's good. Jim?
I would say, again, I think reaching your own personal families and reaching your church is centered around the concept of relational discipleship. So people think in terms of, again, this is a church planning conference, and we're talking about churches that make disciples at home. And again, it does start, to sum that up again, it does, because these homes don't know how, and they weren't discipled if they came from the church usually, or they're unsaved and they have no concept of it at all. It has to start with the church, but it has to start with the leader of the church or the leaders of the church. Not only because they're the model for everybody else, but because they need it or they won't survive. Their own families won't survive. So when I say make disciples that lead to relationship, I mean do it in your own life, or your family is not going to experience all that God has for your family. So I would say it starts with you. And then out of the overflow of that relationship and that process of growing, it will affect everybody else. Because what you're passionate about, you'll talk about. Secondly, I would celebrate people who do that. What you celebrate, people aspire to. Thirdly, I would say, this is why it's so important that you do not have a busy church. That you're not involved in everything. Because relationship takes time. And if you take up all your time with programs, then you're spreading your people too thin to actually have relationships.
Yeah.
So let me say it this way. A lot of churches will try to figure out how to meet needs, and they'll do all these programs to meet physical needs. And I get that. But their real need is different than their perceived need. Their perceived need may be that they need food or they need whatever. And go to where their perceived need is at, but lead them to their real need, relationship with God and relationship with others. But the best way to lead them there is to have relationship with God and relationship with others. So if you spend all of your time doing programs and doing everybody's idea of what it means to be the church, and you don't keep it simple, we have a church service that leads to relational environments for the purpose of spiritual development, for spiritual discipleship. That's what we do. Because I'll just be real honest with you. In my home group, I got a woman whose husband committed suicide last year, and they have 3 kids. I have a woman whose husband left his wife, and she has 2 kids. I have 5 kids that our church has adopted. We take them hunting, because the boys want to hunt. We moved them twice already. We cut wood for them. We do life with them. The ladies hang out together. We're trying to be a spiritual family. Then I have 15 people in my home group. I have one couple that's a blended family, and they're just trying to figure out what that looks like. Let me ask you a question, just from what I've already told you. Is that all time consuming? But if I'm so busy doing all the other stuff, I don't have time for that, then discipleship and relationship just becomes a nice idea for those people.
Yeah.
So as a leader, part of good leadership is to be what you say, not perfect, That's not what you're saying you are. But in relationship, you're focusing on relationship. Mm-hmm. Be transparent about that, because that is real relationship. Real relationship is honest. You're not in a real relationship if you're not honest and transparent. But you want to be that. As a leader of the church, you know what people need rather than always what they want. A good parent doesn't let the crazy kids in the back seat of the car drive the car. You have to say no to a lot of things so that you can say yes to the most important things. Mm-hmm. And again, a lot of people will want things in the church because they're simple. It fits into their life. They want to sprinkle a little Jesus on their life. That will not ever lead to spiritual discipleship. Growth. Won't. Don't let them create a church where they get to check a box and be okay with it. Because there's a billion things they're doing. Every road leads to spiritual relationship with God and others. Every road in your church. And you limit what you're doing so that that is actually a possibility and just an idea.